He didn't have to be a law enforcement officer. But if he'd been a law enforcement officer, and he could have been carrying that around. And I also would say that the business about the telephone, I don't think most people in Oregon know that that's the law. And I think the question here is what the law should be. And I do agree that that is the law, but I'm not at all sure that if the average, I know when people find out that the state is tape recording them when they call in, many of them get very upset. So I think that there is a legitimate concern here about what we're going to do to the level. For myself, I think everything I say, I should assume will be public. I think, you know, those of us in public life must assume that if we're going to be reasonable about what's going to happen in our own lives. But for the non people who haven't made themselves public people, I think this is it's a concern to me. Dan Noelli, Portland Police. Yes, please.
I'm Lieutenant Dan Noelli with the Portland Police Bureau. I'm in charge of the Street Crimes Unit. I'm not an attorney, and I'm not going to try to discuss the constitutionality of this issue. I am concerned about the public policy part of the issue, and I guess, obviously, from the other side of the coin of Mr. House, I feel that it's important that the legislature look at what actually occurs in police work currently and not at a witch hunt of what we are about to do with this. I command a unit called the Street Crimes Unit. We are and feel proud of the fact that we're dealing with innovative law enforcement, and we try to do that in the best way we can for the protection of the people. I think that the real issue, and probably the rationale for allowing body mics or this type of recording in a narcotics violation, was because of the inherent danger of the narcotics violations and the possibility of being shot or injured by a narcotics dealer. This is still occurring, and I think probably the danger to police officers on the street in narcotics enforcement is growing. Our officers are continually finding guns on the people they deal with, continually finding them using more serious and more sophisticated techniques in trying to uncover police operations and in arresting them. I brought with me Officer Ray Pond because she has experienced twice, once in working for myself and once in working another operation, where she has been put out front in a circumstance that was probably extremely dangerous to herself. We tried, of course, to provide the best protection that we can, but at the same time, she ends up being out front with only a system of hand signals to tell us that when she's in danger or when we might have to try to save her from injury or death. I think that the protection for the officers involved in these kind of things is of utmost importance. Secondly, I think there's an issue of best evidence in court, and obviously I think that's already been pointed out, that if you have the actual conversation, that is going to be the best evidence that you can provide in court rather than a rendition brought in by a police officer or police agent. Mr. Howes was concerned about what police agents would use the body mics for or the recording for, and I think one of the things that police can use them for is to check on a police agent. We are in the position at times, regrettable as it is, that we use criminals as police agents. We have to then depend upon what those people tell us in the explanation of what they heard, what they conversations that they had about possible criminal conspiracies to commit robberies, criminal conspiracies to commit burglaries, and other very serious crimes. It would be much better, from my way of thinking, to be able to control those people by the use of the recorded microphone in which you could hear the actual conversation. I think that would provide the defendant a protection from entrapment or from poor police practices, because you would have the actual conversation. Next of all, Mr. House complained about an expense to the state in prosecuting these cases. I worked in a fencing operation. We videotaped each sale as it came in. It was a pretty standard practice. It's still followed in most fencing operations. When we videotaped the situation, we had to take the microphone away from the camera and not use any sound. So we only had silent film. It's kind of like in the 30s where you watch the action, but you don't hear the words. In providing protection for our broker out front, we would have armed officers behind the scenes who could monitor what occurred by watching a monitor, but couldn't come out front and could not listen to the conversation. So therefore, they once again had to depend on a system of hand signals if something went wrong. The savings to the taxpayer was that in one of these operations, we ran like 40 cases, and all 40 cases were either pleas or the district attorney described two of them that went to court as being slam dunk convictions because everything was right there on tape. The defendant had very little protection. And in a lot of those cases, we did use the telephone to call back and verify that the person knew that the property was stolen before they brought them to us. But I think in those kind of cases, it's going to save the taxpayers money because you're going to have that information right there. The judge can listen to it, the jury can listen to it, and make a decision for themselves. Also, one of the problems that I'm concerned about in protection and safety of officers is in conspiracies. We occasionally get information about a robbery or kidnapping, even at times intended murders that are going to occur. If we get that kind of information and we can immediately establish some way to record that conversation, we can then establish that the crime of conspiracy has occurred prior to the crime actually occurring. If you don't, what you're stuck with is you either thwart the robbery before it occurs, or you sit there at the store, wait till the robber approaches, dons his mask, takes his gun out, and then proceeds with either the robbery, where you have a danger to the victim, or you have to challenge them there as they're going into the store armed with their guns. Those are not common, but they do occur, and they are ongoing. And if you would be able to record that before the person got there, you would obviously have the ability to bring the conspiracy charge, and if you're using a police agent, use the police agent in that testimony.
If we pass this bill, if we pass this bill, as a practical matter, what is going to prevent police officers from carrying tape recorders around with them as a normal practice and recording many conversations they have with people on the chance that something might be said that was illegal? No.
Okay, I think the greatest protection that you have is the fact, and I don't see any exclusion of police officers in the fact that that's a 3-year felony, is that you're dealing with a felony crime if you violate the standard of that bill. And I think one of the reasons that we're cautious about how we use it now is the fact that we know it's a crime to proceed and proceed illegally in those matters.
As a practical matter, again, how would anyone know you were recording their conversation in an illegal fashion?
Obviously they wouldn't. But at the same time,
so
we
I
have that...
So I get back to my practical question.
We have that same right now in narcotics violations. And I... know that there are district attorneys here.
Has anybody in the Portland Police Force that you know have been prosecuted for violating the present law?
No. But also, I don't think that I think as a practical matter, it's not commonly used, and it's only used in those kind of buys where you feel your agent is into a situation that's dangerous. We appreciate the fact that we have that tool because we are putting those people into a situation that is extremely dangerous. And I think that when you go in to buy narcotics from a person that you know has a gun, it's some reassurance that you know that the people outside can listen to that conversation. If they hear some threats, they can try to come in and help you.
Okay. Senator Hendrickson.
Well, I had a similar question. Since the evidence would really be in the hands of the person that violated the law, it might be difficult. But I was just wondering, on these body bugs, how do they work? Are they on all the time, or does someone from a different spot determine when they'll be turning off, or does the person who wears them turn on and off, or how? I don't know much how they work.
Okay, the body bug itself is a small transmitter with a microphone. Most of them are equipped with an off-on switch.
So they're like a wireless thing? They pin them or put them in your lapel? Or?
You'd put them in, like, in your pocket. The microphone would be up near your lapel someplace, and then the other part usually taped someplace to your upper body. It's just a small transmitter. There usually is an off-on switch on the transmitter itself so that the person doing the thing could ultimately could actually shut it off. Normally, the recording device is a block or two away with another officer who monitors the conversation.
So, but if that unreliable informer decided they wanted to turn it off, they could turn it off then, if they didn't want you to hear what they were really going to say.
Yeah, yeah. And then you'd have a blank on the tape outside because the tape would run continuously.
I see.
As I said, brought Officer Pond because she has been put in that predicament, both by myself and by others.
I knew I had another question.
Senator Henderson.
If the the safety factor, why wouldn't you limit the bill then to, since I guess the reason for the drug crimes was of the danger to the officers, instead of just having someone committing a felony, why wouldn't you try to limit it? Since I think as a public policy, we'd want to have this more limited than having general surveillance of the public to something where there's probable cause that there's going to be a felony and some violent act or something like that. I mean, I could see a situation where you could have people bugged to pick up prostitutes or people soliciting prostitutes and that kind of thing. I mean, might make an interesting situation in terms of...
Might make for interesting tapes, but under the bill, yeah. as it's stated now, you couldn't do that. Because prostitution is only a misdemeanor. I think that the bill as it is proposed is limited. Because what we're talking about is a felony. We're talking about whether a person has a right to privacy when they're planning to commit or committing a felony.
Well,
and that's the reason I think that the three-year...
I guess the issue is what the language about to commit a felony that's fairly broad language. It's someone's judgment call that someone's is about to commit a felony.
I suppose that any kind of an affidavit even submitted to a judge becomes a judgment call by the judge. Obviously, he's separate from
right, but
the situation.
Doing it on, or she is doing it on the basis of facts that have been submitted and written
mm-hmm.
form.
Mm-hmm.
Two acts of prostitution under the Racketeering Act that makes it a felony.
It was interesting. We had a bust in Eugene of many pillars of the community got picked up for soliciting prostitution several years ago. Interesting what would happen if a lot of the male population thought females were bugged,
It might be a great ounce of prevention, but I don't think that
an ambiguous comment.
I don't think that I would want to be in the position of bugging our decoy prostitutes, and we do, my unit does a lot of the decoy prostitution. I think it would be a waste of tape. I just don't think. I mean, it would be nice evidence, but I don't think that it would really.
Prostitution?
Well, I don't think for misdemeanors. I think it would just be, just an exercise in futility. I think that the thing that we're more concerned about is we're more concerned about the protection of our operatives, our police agents, and the police officers that we put out in undercover situations. And like I said before, I'd like to introduce Ray Pond. Officer Pond worked both a pimping operation and also worked in the area where some rapes and murders had occurred in Southwest Portland. And in that area, she was put out to, in essence, be a decoy victim. And I think Ray can probably explain more of what she did.
Like Lieutenant Nolley said, my name is Ray Pond. I'd like to speak of the two instances that he's referring to. In Southwest Portland, there were a series of rapes, murders, in which some of the women were actually abducted off the street and raped and subsequently murdered. I was placed out into the area as a decoy. I was available in the area, and the officers that were responsible for my safety, since I was not able to communicate my locations or any potential hazards, by the use of a body mic, the only ability that they had to monitor my safety and progression was to follow me in cars. And Southwest Portland is a rather isolated area, so as I was walking in the area where these rapes and murders had occurred. They would try to calculate my speed, where I should be at a certain point, and then if I did not reach that point, they came to look for me. It was rather hazardous. Had I been abducted off the street, I had no way of communicating to them verbally that I was in danger. It would have been quite helpful and enhanced my safety had there been a body mic, and I could have...
Could I ask a question, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hendricks.
I mean, they didn't keep you in visual contact this whole time?
As well as possible. Like I said, you know, there's hills and curves, and it was primarily a residential area out there. And they could not maintain a real close distance to me, you know, if this suspect rapist had seen them, he was not likely to take any action against me. So they tried to maintain visual contact with me, but that was not possible at all times. So they tried to determine how fast I'd be walking and when I should be at a certain point. And that was basically the best that they could do at the time. The other instance, which I was placed as a decoy, was in a pimping operation, which a street crimes unit ran. That time I was in downtown Portland, and as I was approached...
Down by the bus depot?
By the bus depot, where it's a high vice location. And as these males who indicated to me that they were pimps approached in order to make a case of promoting prostitution, I was required to go with them on a one-on-one situation, often to the place of their choice. There was no body mic on me, so the cover officers had no idea where I was going. They were trying to maintain visual contact with me and see where I was going. Oftentimes the men engaged in promoting prostitution would take me to a restaurant, which time it would just be him and me in there, and we'd have a conversation establishing his intentions for an hour and a half, which time I had no other police officers there with me. During these contacts, my life was threatened. I had no way of letting my cover officers know that I was in danger other than by a series of hand signals. Had I been unable to perform these hand signals that had been prearranged, they would have no way of knowing I was in danger. Had there been a body mic available, they would be able to predetermine that there was something escalating before it got to the point where perhaps I was injured physically or some other crime was about to be committed. And in that situation, I felt rather that my safety could have been in jeopardy. As it was, it did not.
Mr. Chair, I just think that's very commendable. You have a lot of courage. I think that is very commendable. But again, I'm just sort of wondering in terms of the visual contact. Seems like that would be absolutely necessary in that kind of a situation, even if you had a body mic on.
Yes, it was necessary, but due to the geography of downtown Portland, for instance, one example, he took me to an Arctic Circle restaurant, which was on a second floor of a building down on Broadway. The other officers were not able to be present in there without being noticed, so due to this certain situation, they were told me that the person that had visual contact with me was two blocks away with binoculars. There were other officers closer, however, the only person that had visual contact with me was two blocks away, and there was absolutely no conversation that could be overheard.
Was there any, on that decoy operation, did anything happen with that in terms of picking up someone? Or?
We made several arrests. We were, based on my conversations with pimps, we made...
No, I meant on the rape-murder one.
On the rape-murder one? No, there wasn't.
Was that the Burlingame rapist?
No, it was...
Well, it's not important.
We did, however, arrest Randy Woodfield, who some of you may recognize as being the I-5 rapist or the I-5 bandit, who was later indicted on some murders. We arrested him in Portland using exactly the same techniques about 5 or 6 years before his subsequent arrests, and he spent some time in the penitentiary sitting a female decoy up a wooded hillside off of Dunaway Park, and then covering that so that when Woodfield approached her with a knife to commit rape, we were able to get to her quickly enough to stop it. But at the same time, and in that situation, we could not use, under the current law, we could not use the body mic to protect our person, to protect our, in this case, undercover officer, or in the case of an agent, protect the agent.
So you didn't use a body mic when you arrested Winfield?
No, no.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Henderson.
It just seems like in that dangerous situation, though, if you weren't in close enough proximity to be in visual contact, that your body mic isn't going to help because the person could be dead by the time you got there anyway.
No, because what we will do, like with the pimping operation, like she explained, what we will do is put the decoy in a position where we can have backup officers very close, and we do a lot of decoys for other types of crimes also. We put backup officers very close to the decoy, but the person who is trying to watch and tell the backup officers what's going on sometimes has to be some distance away. Now, that would be the same position that a person with the recorder or the monitor with the body mic would be, but he then, whoever that person is, he or she then has contact back with the covering officers by radio. And he can say to the backup officers, he is now saying he has a gun, and if she raises her hands or makes any motion, he's going to shoot her. And then the officers that are close by could react accordingly. And that's the way it's done. It is a high risk, but at times there are some of these crimes that are significant enough that you do have to take a certain amount of risk. We plan them as carefully as we can for the safety of the operatives or the safety of the agent that you use. But at the same time, the risk is always there. We're not talking about wiretapping. We're not talking about wholesale recording of everybody that you walk up to in the street. We're not talking about those other kind of things. We're talking about the ability under some kind of a policy control within our bureau, and I would be making a lot of those policy control judgments, that we would be able to provide that person with that kind of physical protection. And it's just one additional, it's not an ultimate answer, but it is one additional form of protection.
We've got two more bills, so I think we've got to move along. Thank you very much. Ed, I can't quite read your signature there. From the Multnomah County SD, it looks like. That's PD.
Mr. Chairman, Senators, I'm Ed Hossifus with Multnomah County Sheriff's Office. I think I would just more or less reiterate what Lieutenant Norley has said. I think we feel this bill is necessary primarily for the protection of our officers. Very often, as has been pointed out, we are sending people into very dangerous kinds of situations. In addition to the narcotics part of it, we're also dealing with the sting projects, in which we're sending people into similar kinds of situations where they're purchasing stolen property, and in many instances we're dealing with the same individuals. I would also suggest that this bill would be very desirable, and well, had we had it, say, a year ago before the Kessler escape, the Rocky Butte Jail escapes, because in those situations we were sending our undercover officers again into very dangerous situations with informants who knew these people who had escaped, some of the prostitutes who knew these people, and again, a body mic would certainly have been advantageous. As it was, whenever we had to follow people, we had to use the standard kinds of methods, and we were also, however, able to use an automobile kind of device to keep track of the people.
Okay, thank you very much. I'd like to go on to the next bill now. Wendell Berkland has signed up on this bill. Could you come back or submit a letter, or are you really very eager? I know you've come all the way down from Portland. Are you very eager to testify on this tonight? Could you do it in like 2 minutes?
I can do it briefly.
Okay.
I'm not sure I can ever do anything in 2 minutes.
Well, I know how that works. So with myself.
You cut me off whenever you fire.
Okay. Try and go really fast. We've had a long discussion of this bill, and I know you've prepared.
I know you have. I'd like to address a couple of things, and just a couple of things that I've heard that I think deserve attention. No one likes to say that we want officers to be put in dangerous situations, but I do think protection of the officers is often used as a blanket reason to violate constitutional rights, or at least move us out to the far reaches of constitutional rights. It's used to justify free search or a violation of a no-knock provision in a search warrant. I've been involved in law enforcement for 4 years as a deputy district attorney from 72 to 76, and I've been a criminal defense lawyer for the years since then until now. I know of no case in that entire period of time, in the city of Portland at least, where an officer was shot by a person during the course of a narcotics buy. Now, I don't want an officer to be shot. I don't want an officer to be injured. But I do think oftentimes we use this as a justification for many types of bills like this. I don't think it's the real reason it's wanted in this case. I think it's a desire to have another tool for law enforcement. And it's been said by other people that perhaps this tape will be an excellent protection for both the officer and the defendant at time of trial. And I believe Senator Gardner mentioned perhaps this is very damaging evidence. One of the key problems with this bill is that it allows the officer to use the recordation device anytime he feels he has reasonable cause to believe a person is engaged in, as we've said. There is no requirement that the officer record all the conversations. It says use a listening device or a recording device. I would feel much more comfortable with this bill if every time the officer was to use a recording device, we had all the tapes that he used. Now, we have that protection when a wiretap is used. We have that protection because all the tapes are sealed and they're submitted to the court. Then we could find out if there was a violation, even of this very loose standard of reasonable cause. I wanted to draw to the committee's attention a couple of cases in the wiretap section where we have a protection of a judge supervising the use of a wiretap. And in both of those cases that I'm going to mention, one in Multnomah County and one in Clackamas County, judges have authorized a wiretap in cases where, and I could read from the affidavits, but basically it was in a position where the defendant had exercised his right to silence, or the officer felt that he would exercise his right to silence in the future. In one case, the individual had contacted a lawyer, and reading from the affidavit, it says the principal suspect is now represented by counsel and refuses to discuss this matter further. In another case, the officer says in his affidavit, the individual in the past, upon arrest and advice of rights, has asked for assistance of counsel, and we feel he will do so when he is arrested on this case. In both of those cases, they applied for wiretaps and got them. I'm concerned that in cases like this, it will be a situation where the officers will use this as a means to go around the wiretap statute, send in someone, perhaps into jail or somewhere else, in an attempt to get somewhat incriminating evidence and only use selectively that which is most incriminating. Now, I'm very concerned about that because in these two cases I saw, there was evidence which was coming in over the wiretap. Portions of it would have been very exculpatory. At those times, the tape was shut off. The officer on questioning during the course of my trial said he felt that was irrelevant. Therefore, we didn't have the tape. Here, there's not even a requirement that they tape it. Now, if you want to put this bill in and you want the officers to tape everything that they do so that we can have access to all of it, so that we could see if there is a sequence of entrapment leading into that, that'd be fine. But here, all there has to be is reasonable cause with no way to check that. And I believe the chairman brought that out very effectively. We're not even going to know if they're doing it, let alone whether or not there's a violation. The only way we'd find out about a violation here is if the officer saw fit to submit the tapes to someone else to prove that he was in violation of the reasonable cause grounds. And I don't think that will happen. Now, I'm concerned.
Senator Frye, could I ask this question, sir? I think I'm over my 2 minutes. But
well,
That doesn't affect me.
Sure.
Yeah, you can't get out of it that way. Go
ahead. If this bill were amended to provide two things, first, that any evidence that was gathered in violation of this statute would be inadmissible, and second, so therefore, there's obviously a vehicle to determine whether or not reasonable cause existed, for example, and whatever other requirements are in there, and secondly, that the law enforcement agent would be required to provide as part of discovery or at the hearing or whenever this question is going to be decided now in the motion to suppress, it would be required that the entire conversation be recorded. Now, if that were built into this kind of a law, would you have any objections?
It would be better. Here's the problem, though. The way this statute is written, it merely says the officer has reasonable cause. There's no finding at that time, a writing down, a statement of what that reasonable cause is. What we'd be forced to do and what we would be doing at that motion to suppress is attempting to test the officer 2 months later as to what his reasonable cause was prior to the time he taped, and we'd have no way of knowing what his reasonable cause was at the time because he didn't write it down.
You do that all the time on motion to suppress.